if I had my way, we would have play working its way all the way through high school, college. And frankly, I think every boardroom in the country needs to have a break room for their staff that includes puzzles, Play-Doh, art supplies, and Legos.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And today we're going to be talking about play and literacy and how these two things make total sense for us to talk about and implement on together. And joining us to talk about that is Dr. Diane Jackson-Schnorr, director of Dr. Diane's Adventures of Learning. And Diane, welcome to Learning Unboxed. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm such a fan, and I'm so glad we get to have this conversation today.
Excellent. I am a fan as well and super excited. And just sort of a headliner note, Dr. Diane and I got to have an adventure together when I had the opportunity to be on her show. And so super excited that we could swap, if you will, and be able to have a conversation here as well for our listeners on Learning Unboxed. So just a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. Dr. Diane's Adventures of Learning focuses on transformative learning, which is why we love it so much, through workshops, podcasts, and so much more. Dr. Diane explores how we can use wonder, curiosity, and connection to grow the problem solvers we need today. She explores building deeper connections between play, literacy, and engaged hands-on experiences at every level. And again, pretty obvious why Diane and I connected so much here. Let's start with this concept. So, you know, there's a lot of chatter, especially in the elementary school spaces, around, you know, where is the balance between these are our amazing young people. There's so much happening at those sort of ages and spaces and time. And on the one hand, we have this compelling need, almost this draw that says we need to start really formalizing learning and emphasizing the sort of play aspects of childhood. And I think sometimes we get lost in the dichotomy of when and what and how.
I think we've created a false dichotomy for ourselves. And in so many ways, we've cut off play. We sort of, kids go into kindergarten and we're like, okay, it's time to get serious about school. And we're missing a golden opportunity to be able to continue to extend what we do in early childhood all the way up, because there's so much rich engineering and scientific thinking that goes on in those early years. And teachers have the opportunity to think thematically and to offer invitations to play that still get to real deep learning, but they do it in a way that it's more organic. And you've got a chance to allow kids to explore and dive deeper into their interests. If I had my way, we would have play working its way all the way through high school, college. And frankly, I think every boardroom in the country needs to have a break room for their staff that includes puzzles, Play-Doh, art supplies, and Legos. So I think that play is something that we're missing an opportunity as educators to build some really powerful connections.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really interesting because we've talked about play on Learning Unboxed a couple of different times. And it's really, really intriguing how much this topic resonates, not just with our listeners, but certainly we hear it repeatedly with practitioners. And I do think that in our efforts to cram as much as we possibly can into this artificial constraint that is an academic year, right? We have have, in fact, lost sight of the fact that play is one of the singular most creative moments that we have, whether we're little learners or, to your point, we're adults in a boardroom. As we get more formalized, I guess maybe is the way to think about it, and we start to compartmentalize, we lose the fluid synergies that I think that play offers from a creative standpoint. And in a world where we're desperate for innovations to solve and do for us, that innate skill, I almost think we train out of ourselves. What do you think about that?
I think you've just hit it completely. On the one hand, we talk about we want to build 21st century learners. And we know that a 21st century learner is supposed to be collaborative, connected, creative, a critical thinker, somebody who can problem solve. Those skills aren't the skills that you learn by memorizing facts. It's by being able to work together with somebody, to roll up your sleeves, to get messy and make mistakes, to try things and be willing to fail, and then to pick yourself back up. When I work with students and teachers and we do these STEAM challenges connected to books, what I'll often find is that the child who might be ignored or marginalized in a more formalized structure is the kid who rises to the top and becomes the leader in these challenges because they've had experience with falling down and picking themselves back up. And so they're less worried about getting it right and more engaged with, well, what happens if I put this together? What happens if we do this? And I think that there are so many beautiful ways we can offer these invitations and bake them into the day so that it's not that you're asking a teacher to do one more thing, because heaven knows we don't need to do that. But it's looking at how can we take what you're doing and add these layers in that will ultimately make your job easier and get better results.
Absolutely, absolutely. And since you brought up books and some of the work that you're doing in those workshops and those trainings, so help our listeners who might not see the obvious connection between the work that you do around literacy and play, because it is this amazing opportunity, both for our students, but also for the educators to engage in this way. So walk us through a little bit of how you think about the synergy between these things.
So I'm going to use an example that I think is fairly universal. Let's use the Three Little Pigs, since we all know the story and it shows up in other ways. The thing I like about the Three Pigs is there are a number of different variations on it. And so you've got the three javelinas, you've got the three snow bears, you've got the three little fish and the big bad shark. You've got all of these different variations that take place in different habitats, in different settings. So for me, that's like one of the first connections you can make is you can think about story and story structure. You know, you've got the threes, you know that in it, you've got your villain, you've got the what do I want, what am I trying to get? So you can talk about plot and characters and sequencing. But you can take it even deeper. When I was working in preschool, and that's sort of where all of this comes from in terms of this particular series, I had a friend named Andrew. And Andrew was the kid who asked all the questions. Everybody out there has had an Andrew.
Absolutely.
He was my why boy. And he's the reason I own a smartphone today, because I could not keep up with Andrew. And the question that broke me was, how many bones are in a giraffe's neck? Any idea?
Not a clue. I would have to look it up.
There are seven. I will never forget this fact. It's the exact same number that we have in our neck. And what I said to Andrew that day is something that became the mantra for all of the ways that I connect STEAM and literacy. It was, I don't know the answer. Let's find out together. And so we did some research and we brought in, I got my smartphone and I went to the library and I was able to find some books and I brought them in so that we could look it up and try to figure it out. But we didn't stop there. And so this is where the connection to the Three Pigs came in. Because the other kids saw Andrew engaging with me and finding answers to his questions, they wanted in on it. So suddenly I've got this golden opportunity to connect all these other kids in the idea of what's a mammal. And let's look at the Three Pigs. The Three Pigs has pigs and wolves. What kind of animals are they, I wonder? So we start talking about, you know, they're mammals. Well, what makes a mammal? And so suddenly we're sorting. And so this is where literacy comes in. We're doing picture sorts. And as we're sorting, whether it's a mammal or something else, because we established mammals are warm-blooded, they have hair, and they drink milk from their mamas. Yeah, I kept it simple. We're talking preschool.
Yeah, exactly.
But we use pictures and we start sorting. And so we start thinking, okay, pup, 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 pig. So we're working in those letter sounds. And we're thinking about, you know, okay, we can sort them this way. We can sort mammals and everything else. We can sort all the things that start with the letter P and all the things that start with the letter W. And so suddenly we've got a different sort going. So I'm sneaking in beginning sounds. We're building in word families because we start playing with language. Pig, oh, pig. That's really funny. They're in the ig family. And wow, he's building a house with a twig. And look, the wolf has a shovel and he's starting to dig. And so we're playing with language and it's happening organically. We're also using environmental print. And so as we're playing with the story, we start going back and forth on, ooh, that's really interesting. This version took place in the forest. Let's make a forest and paint it on our window and let's put animals up on the window that live in the forest. So the kids are cutting fine motor skills. They're creating these animals. And we're labeling them. And the kids are helping me label. And I'm reaching out to where they are. Because there were some kids who were able to do one letter at that point. There were others who could do their whole name. And they would help me with the labeling. And they would do what they could do. And I would help fill in the rest. But then we started putting up the pig with P-I-G under it. And we had the wolf. And we had other animals, the deer and the bears that would live in the forest. And they're starting to recognize the environmental print as well. And there's a sense of pride and ownership because they've contributed.
I love that.
And so I suddenly have a forest, but then you've got the three snow bears. So we have the Arctic tundra. And then we've got the rainforest and we've got the desert. So by the end of the year, we've worked all the biomes in as well.
I love that.
We've done it by playing with these stories. As we're doing it, I'm giving them opportunities in the sensory table to world build. And so they're playing with, you know, when we did the three snow bears, we brought in snow from outside. You can make snow too. They sell it online. But I liked when we could always do it with the real stuff. The kids liked it too.
Sure.
You know, we had the little fake animals. I'm a big fan of what you can get at garage sales and thrift stores and retired teachers. They're always a good source of stuff. But they story built as they're playing, they're retelling the stories. So again, they're engaging and making literacy their own. They're communicating. And then I started working science in too. Let's go back to the three pigs. What is the wolf doing to try to blow down the house? He's using air. It's a glorious opportunity to introduce air pressure. And there are so many experiments you can do. I love to do one where you have a glass bottle. And you've got crumpled up paper and pom-poms and foil in just little balls. And you put it on the edge of the bottle and you give the kids different straws. And so each kid has their own bottle. They've got a straw. And you're like, I wonder what would happen if we blow with our straw and blow this ball. Where's it going to go? And they all think it's going to go into the bottle, right? And then they try it and it comes right back out at them. Yeah. You must have a straw that doesn't work. What happens if we try try a different straw? What happens? And you just let them play and experiment. And so you give them time to have that experience. And then you point out what was in the bottle. It's not really an empty bottle. There's something there already. And so you get into air and air pressure. From there, you can build connections to the weather and, you know, low pressure, high pressure. There's just so many beautiful ways to connect this simple story to your science content, to your language arts content, and to your social studies content. And it all happened with the three pigs.
I love that so much, right? What a wonderful journey that you were able to go on with those kids. So I'm super curious for our listeners then. So I think many of us will be like, oh, that makes total sense. I can completely see that in a preschool or elementary sort of setting. But the reality you and I know is that the same is true for middle school, which on par from a developmental, our bodies, our brain sort of space to those first 2 years of life. Like there's so much happening, you know, to our young selves in that moment. And then when we get into high school as well, and yet sometimes to, you know, how we started the conversation, we forget that we can use these exact same tools and strategies and methodologies that you beautifully articulated with our journey with our three pigs. And I love the biomes element coming into all of that and how inclusive that is. But we can do the same thing with older groups as well. So how do you help our educators who see the mindset of, wow, this is really more of an elementary and I really have to focus in on this singular math lesson because that's what I'm here to do. How do you help our educators sort of get over the hump of that belief?
I think some of it is giving them a chance to step out and play themselves. And I've found when you do professional development with educators, if you can get that time that they get a chance to play and then think about how can I apply it, it makes a big difference. The other thing I'll say to them is baby step in. You don't have to start with the three pigs fully fleshed out like I just shared. Think about one of your lessons and try it once this month and see what happens. And then build it and try another one. And keep trying, and eventually you're going to find that you've got enough that you could make this a weekly thing. And it becomes something your students look forward to. It may not be how you teach all day, every day, but it becomes something that you're better able to do. And so to give an example that would be more middle school appropriate, let's say we're talking about architecture and building, which is your three pigs, but it's elevated. There are different versions of the three pigs, which are really fun. There are things like Dreaming Up, which isn't the three pigs, but it's about architecture. And it compares side by side a child playing to an actual building. And they're diverse multicultural architects, and they have little bios in the back. Go to the back of the book and blow up those bios. And you could start by having kids. This is how it would introduce it, thinking going off the top. Start by having everybody do a universal challenge. Maybe you bring in packs of index cards and it can be a 5-minute build. And when you put a time limit on things, you actually get kids to zero in and focus and you get them to explore the phenomenon. You give them time to do it, but you've got their interest and it doesn't go on forever and ever. So you bring in these packs of index cards and say, okay, all you can use is the index cards, and you have to build the tallest structure you can that will support your textbook or support this book. Go. And put them in pairs or teams too, because yeah. I think you get more out of it when you're collaborating. Give them that time to build. And then after you've had time for it, let it fail, let things fall. If you've got kids who zoom through it, add a layer to it. Say, oh, that's great. Now, can you use fewer materials and support 4 books? And, you know, you can add to it based on where they are. Let them succeed. Let them succeed to the point that they fail and the cards fall down. Process it. That's the big piece is we often forget to have, you know, we do the fun thing and we forget to talk about what did you learn? Why were we doing this? So take a moment to process and let them turn and talk to each other. Let them share the lessons they gained from it. And then you can launch into your lesson about shapes and architects. You know, you can launch into the different shapes that we use when we're building. And then if you want to take it further, you can turn it into a research project. And it can become something where they play with different materials to build a house, but they have to do it in the style of whatever architect or builder you've given them to research. So suddenly you're building in the research and the higher level thinking component. You can have them share their knowledge in different ways. It doesn't always have to be an essay. Maybe you have them produce a TikTok video where they have to distill their person to 30 seconds. And that requires some that's playful. You know, that's their form of play. They use TikTok to play. And so come to their level. Say, okay, you've got this architect that you need to introduce us to. How would you do it within the confines of a 30-second TikTok? What's the important stuff for us to know? So you can find different ways to let them learn. And again, you're building on different strengths. You're still bringing an element of playfulness to it. and you're giving them a chance to collaborate and solve problems. There are real world problems that you can bring in as well. You know, thinking about sort of higher level kids. I interviewed a kid on my podcast a little while back who is working with the Dark Skies Initiative. And this is a 17-year-old who feels so passionately about the idea that we need to have darker skies that he's launched a worldwide group of students who are writing letters and speaking out and working with scientists to get those papers out. Let your students work with you on those upper levels to come up with what are the real world problems we need to solve. And let's use some class time to dedicate to maybe let's prototype some solutions. And when we get into engineering and design, you're still building on what we did in those early years of preschool and elementary. But now you're adding those layers of you've got knowledge to bring to the table. Let's come up with some solutions that might work.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
100%. And then if you add an authentic audience to those presentations, to those TikToks, to those whatever that the student chooses, now all of a sudden you're also building and gaining confidence for those learners as they talk to other professionals or experts that are coming in to hear their solutions. So I appreciate that very much because this is exactly the way PAS Foundation, how we think about what the future of teaching and learning should look like, right? And none of what you and I are talking about here today is new. And yet, in all of the sort of processing and the testing and the policy initiatives of the last 50 years, we've lost our way. Right? We have forgotten about honoring the humans in our system and saying that play and creativity and collaboration, that these are incredibly powerful ways for our kiddos to learn and to be really high-level thinkers and problem solvers and learners who for a lifetime will take those skills with them. So I appreciate that so very, very much.
Well, and I think some of it, too, is having that expectation that they can do it. It's that
100%.
Belief
yes.
that they're all, you know, you're coming from an asset-based approach. You're looking at these students and realizing they've got gifts, and they're not the same gifts, but you're giving them a chance to try things and to be able to develop their appreciation for what they can do.
Absolutely. Okay, so I'm loving this conversation, so thank you for that. But I also know that we're going to have folks that are out there saying, this is great, I love it, but I'm not allowed to teach this way. So what are some, like, 2 or 3 sort of bullet points or conversation components that you would arm that individual with to say, hey, go into your principal or your administrator's office, and this is what you put out there to say, I need to try this. I need the freedom as a trained educator to tap into my own strengths and potentials here, right, with my students.
So quick bullet points that I would share with an administrator is we know from the research that when we engage in open-ended questions and invitations to play, that students thrive. They develop the skills we need to be collaborative, creative, critical thinkers, and problem solvers. And so we need to be able to set up our school and our classroom so that we're nurturing and honoring this. That would be the first thing. And there are so many studies out there that support this. The second thing I would say is there's a lot of stuff that connects the science of reading to these opportunities to use hands-on experiences and natural phenomenon to engage. When you are engaged in those hands-on learning experiences and you've got an authentic audience to communicate to, then you're more motivated to read, to write, to think. And so you, again, have to build these opportunities to be able to do that. The third thing I would say is, if you want me to be an efficient teacher who is using my time wisely, then allow me to connect science and social studies to language arts. And math can roll into that as well, because suddenly when I'm using habitats and our study of habitats as my vehicle, and I'm using hands-on, engaging, playful opportunities in science, I can naturally build in all of the language arts you need me to build in. I can connect opportunities to read, to write, to speak. I can build in vocabulary. I can build in grammar. I can build in word study. And I can do it in a way that the kids are feeling authentically heard and seen. It's going to cut down on my behavior issues, and it's going to engage all of my students and not just the ones who are the most compliant and school ready.
Absolutely. And, you know, of course, we're talking about transdisciplinary problem-based learning here, which, as you well know, I love. So definitely those are, you know, some of those key components, those five strategies that we know makes absolute difference for our learners. So I appreciate that very much in terms of just helping our educators out there who might be encountering resistance. I remember years ago, a project that we were working on to bring STEM, high-quality STEM education, to deeply, deeply rural environments. And the biggest issue there was geography, right? Because we couldn't get really, really high-quality teachers, especially science teachers, willing to go to some of these places. They were too remote. They were too rural. And yet, we have this obligation to ensure that all kids, right, get high-quality educational opportunity and instruction. And so, it's interesting because I remember doing community conversations with families because something was going to be different. You know, we had a community that hadn't had a science teacher in 12 years, the entire district.
Wow.
Right? 12 years. Now, I would give the district this. They were super creative, man. They were doing everything they possibly could. You know, and of course, it ended up being an awful lot of pretty dry online science instruction. But, you know, they knew they needed to do it, and they were making it happen. And I remember the community conversations around, well, one of the ways we're going to tackle this, right, is we're going to continue, but we're going to find a great science teacher in another rural community who can be that online teacher. But we're going to pack that remote educator with all of these local resources and people, right? All of you families, right, who are amazing and you're doing science every single day and you're just not really aware that you're doing it. And we talked about what it would mean to make this transition. And folks were terrified in many ways because that's not what it looked or felt like for me when I was a kid. So those things will work, right? But sometimes they're a bit of a lift. So I appreciate that. I always, Diane, want to be super mindful as we're wrapping the conversation, recognizing that there are folks in a variety of different circumstances in their work, teaching and learning, who are just wondering how to get started. And you gave some great examples, but if I'm hesitant, what's the best way to get started?
I would say partner with somebody, maybe partner with your school librarian. Go to them and ask, what book would you recommend that's funny and that would connect to this particular topic? Let yourself fall in love with a picture book. Behind me, I have Shipwrecked by Ashley Belote, which I just did a workshop with her last week for a bunch of early childhood teachers. I fell in love with this book because when I opened it and examined it, it has these beautiful pun-filled maps. You're going to the Bahamas. You're going to Barbados. I was hooked on the puns. But as I'm reading it, I'm looking at the illustrations going, oh my goodness, this could be really fun to use with sync and float. And we could also do sequencing where we follow directions and we try to solve a treasure map like the pirates would, because it's all about pirate sheep. We could build ships and see what's going to sink in, or whether we can make a ship float and how much weight we can add to it. So find something that's going to spark that joy in you. And so think about, you know, I'm going to be teaching X topic. What's a way that I can have fun with it and that the kids can have fun with it? And pick that one thing and try it. Get feedback from them on what works and then try again. And if it flops, that's okay. You tried it and you're going to try again. And you're modeling for the kids that I'm trying a different approach, a new way of doing things. And I want us to, as I said at the beginning, let's find out together.
I love that very much. And who knew? Sheepwreck. I'm going to have to grab that one for my own grandchildren.
So it's so much fun.
I've not seen that, and I'm going to go grab it because it sounds perfect. So one last follow-up question then. As you were talking, one of the things that I was thinking about is this idea that could we, as part of this sort of process, and this is possibly a pretty radical idea, but when I'm thinking about, there's a lot of work going on right now across the country and around the world around really recognizing that we've got to do something different, that our learners today are very, very different, largely because of the rapid pace of technological advances that have literally changed our biological, our physiology, right? Our brains, our students, especially younger kids, as they're coming into school, our brains are different because of the impacts of technology and our exposure to those. So with all of that in mind, you know, do we need policy work on a broader scale that says that we are going to unconstrain in some very specific spaces and processes? I'm just really curious about, you know, what is it that we truly, truly need, right, to make sure that we are being adaptive to the needs of the moment, but recognizing that the future is going to look so different for the people that are going through school right now?
I think we need agreement, and I felt like we had it for a while, on what the end product is. You know, I talked about those 21st century learning skills. We talk about what we want, and we've sort of embedded that into national standards, but the disagreement comes in how we get there. We're trying to get to something new by doing the same old, same old, and that doesn't work. And so I think that what we need is policy and training, because teachers need to feel empowered to be able to do this. So the policy and training to be able to look at assessment from a more portfolio-based approach, where you are looking at progress over the course of a year. You're looking at the individual child and, you know, how have they progressed as a thinker? How have they progressed as a problem solver? What strengths do they have? You know, are they collaborative? Do they have empathy? Do they know how to work with other people? You know, where are their strengths and weaknesses? And within that, you're still looking at, can they read? I mean, you know, basic numeracy? We're not getting rid of that. But you're looking at the kid from a broader lens. And you're also looking at the teacher from a broader lens. So you're rewarding the teacher who is innovative and is willing to spend the time. Because you talked about the attention deficits and sort of kids are coming in wired differently. One of the things that learning through play does is it changes that circuit, and it gives you time to really develop the muscles to sit with a problem and to work on solving it and to hit frustrations and to figure out how to work through those. But you can't do that by saying, okay, we're going to do this from 8 to 8:30.
Right.
So it's allowing the teacher the structure to say, okay, this is the roadmap. This is where we want to get. How you get there is up to you within these constraints. And I think that if we could change one thing, it would be going back to or providing a way for administrators to recognize the individuality in their teachers as well, and to say, this is the end goal. How are we going to get there? So make that more collaborative in the problem solving as well.
I love that. Thank you very much for that. I think that's absolutely spot on. So I want to thank you so much, Diane, for taking time out of your day to chat with us. And equally important, I want to thank you for Dr. Diane's Adventures of Learning. I highly recommend, we will have it in the show notes. If you're not familiar with this podcast or Diane's work, please go and check it out. Give it a listen. You will enjoy it very, very much. So thank you again for being with us today.
Well, and thank you so much for having me on your show. It has been such a joy to have these important conversations, and you're doing so much to change the way that we think about education.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin, and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.